observations wherever you may be. We'll have Scott in and out during the program today, and I have Kirk with us. Hello, Kirk.
Good afternoon, and happy Sukkah.
Happy Sukkah. I've got a couple of things in the news. One is just for no other reason to underscore the reasons I say you ought not put a lot of faith in the news media. Now, I'm not a fake news guy. I'm not going to push you off to social media and Facebook. But I was reading a number of stories on the aircraft. Under that Air France A380, which is the jumbo version of the 747. You know, it's got the second story goes all the way back. It lost the front third, which would be the compressor section of its engine. One of four engines, I think it was right engine, the outboard engine on the right side, while crossing the Atlantic at about, 6,000 feet, 38,000 feet perhaps. So I read two stories on it. The first story said that they aborted their Atlantic crossing. Do you know where they landed?
No.
Well, they were flying from Paris, and they landed in Canada.
Well, that's across the sea, isn't it?
Can you tell me how would you have aborted your Atlantic crossing if you took off in Paris and you landed in Canada?
Okay.
So first they couldn't figure out that was stupid. No, they aborted the remainder of their flight, which had been the transcontinental aspect across the United States. It was destined for Los Angeles. The second, they said that it was a bird strike. Are you aware of migratory birds? Well, is that these engines, by the way, are tested. They must be able to ingest, I think it is, five bird strikes, a shot at them at a pneumatic cannon, and the range of 300, 400, and 500 miles an hour. Are you aware of a bird species that have figured out how to wear oxygen masks and that successfully fly at 38,000 feet?
No.
Okay, so that was stupid. And then the next thing is that a journalist decided, and these were, Los Angeles, I mean, New York Times, Los Angeles Times, BBC. These were guys that should have their ducks in a row, at least be able to ask intelligent questions. And then they said it was the power section of the engine. The compressor is that front section. The hot section of the engine is where you mix in the jet fuel that creates the combustion and therefore the power. If the compressor was able to create power, then you wouldn't need to burn jet fuel. Yeah, they didn't get anything right. By the way, that engine is as part of a Camel project. It's like the Joint Strike Fighter. Airbus, for what reasons that I do not know, decided that they would take two fierce competitors, GE and Pratt & Whitney, and have them collaborate on the engine. So that engine is the one and only engine from what's called Engine Alliance, where Pratt & Whitney makes the compressor stage, which failed. A fan blade cracked and it blew apart. A liberated fan blade ought not take out the entire compression section. I mean, the entire front one-third of the engine was gone, including the cowling around it. It ought not have a complete disaster of that nature, because it can throw fan blades right through the cockpit at that point and start killing people. And take out the hydraulic systems, and that could be a really bad thing. But anyway, it's the front one third of it is made by Pratt. That's the compressor section. GE makes everything from that on back. The Trumpster. Did you watch the Trumpster in Puerto Rico?
I had only a tiny bit before we took off. So.
Oh my God! What an idiot! He made an utter and complete fool of himself. He wanted to talk about how Katrina was a real disaster as opposed to Hurricane Maria, because he said, well, how many people do you have die here? And he said, well, it was thousands. He started out with hundreds. Then he went to thousands on Katrina. I think Katrina was between 1,000 and 2,000 people, so it technically wasn't thousands. But he wants to say, you guys did great here because, that was a real disaster, and yeah, that was
wow,
death toll. And he says, you know, you're I hate to tell you, Puerto Rico, but you're throwing our budget out of whack. And the Secretary of State, therefore, called him the most appropriate name that one could call such an individual.
That's the moron. That's right.
Yeah.
Moron.
So Tillerson called him a moron. And
rightfully so.
You're rightfully so. The Trumpster was taking a picture with all of his military men and their wives in the White House in a photo op. And he yelled out to the press, this is the calm before the storm. And so somebody in the press says, well, what's the storm? Says, you'll find out. You'll find out. So what's he going to do? Fire Tillerson? Is that the storm? Is he going to attack North Korea?
The Tillerson thing probably was averted when Tillerson came out earlier in the week and said, look, I'm not going to be part of this. He goes, I got stuff to do.
Well, yeah, not saying that he didn't call him a moron, he certainly called him a moron, and Trump's pretty thin-skinned, so... That's probably going to cost him his job.
I don't think it will. I don't. You could be right, and it really doesn't matter to me either way.
It matters to me in only one respect. I can't stand Tillerson's and America's position on Russia. I don't like Putin. I don't like Russia. But listen, if a nation buying social media ads can significantly influence your election to the point that you have to have the FBI, the CIA, and both houses of Congress investigate it, and you're all up in arms and you have to put sanctions on Russia because they bought ads on Google and on Facebook and social media, and your population is so utterly stupid that they can't tell that news in social media from Facebook is probably a really crappy place to get your news. If you're reading something on Facebook, it's because somebody is trying to make a nickel.
Yeah. He wasn't even... When did all this start? Like, as soon as he won the nomination from the Republicans? Start way back when?
Fake news on in social media has been the mainstay of social media since social media was invented. Yeah. I mean, when people present themselves in social media, that isn't who they really are. I mean, the whole thing is artificial. But just think of how bad a shape your nation is when you're accusing another country of affecting your election because they ran fake news stories in social media, and your citizens weren't smart enough to sift through them to tell the difference, nor smart enough to know you ought not be getting your news from social media. You've got a much bigger problem than Russia, and Russia is not your problem. That being the case, let's turn to Las Vegas. When Las Vegas happened, the fellow name was released right away, so that meant it wasn't a Muslim. They never tell you the Muslim's name until days after. And it wasn't a Muslim. You know, there's only two common denominators in all mass shootings. Every mass shooting is one of two common denominators. You know what they are?
Well, I would say drugged or just totally nuts.
Now, Muslim or...
Than Muslim. Okay.
Muslims are drugs. And the drugs are not, you know, if you're taking fentanyl or heroin or cocaine, you're not going to go become a mass shooter. The drugs are the mind-altering drugs. This fellow was on Valium. He was prescribed Valium in June, a heavy dose of Valium in June. Valium has a side effect that in a number of people it creates very aggressive behavior. He began this whole aggressive spree back in June. There isn't a motive. That's why there is no manifesto. There is no note. The note in the room is nothing but a bunch of numbers. So there is no motivation, but there is a cause. And the cause isn't guns.
I thought it was all the guns. Oh.
No, the cause is the same as the common denominator of every mass shooting that isn't a Muslim. Mind-altering drugs. Valium is an anti-anxiety drug, and it has a side effect of aggressive behavior. The chemicals in the drug altered his thinking such that he was rendered incapable of exercising good judgment, and he was became extremely aggressive. That's it. Nothing more to it than that. The other thing I want to talk about in terms of Las Vegas is the timeline. I don't know how many people know this, but and I recognized it the first night. The first morning that you saw the thing transpire, I said, well, there's something really, really odd going on here. That fellow knocked out the two windows in his hotel, and, you know, he had everybody looking for a gun. But how could you look for the gun? I mean, you can see the muzzle flash. In fact, within the first volley, two people called the police and said he's in room so-and-so, you know, what was it, 32nd floor. They said he was not only 32nd floor, they told him exactly what room number he was in. Within seconds of the first volley, one guy was right below him in the room and said, you know, he's right above me. So I'm in room, you know, 31, whatever, and he's in room 32 with the same corners, suite.
Yeah.
And you can see the muzzle flash. He shot for exactly 11 minutes. And, you know, everybody was talking in the news about, you know, what kind of a weapon was he using? You know, and it must have been just a, you know, and the former police chief of New York was saying, well, the weapon was something of a high caliber. It was probably a 9 or 10 millimeter. No, he's using an assault rifle. It's a 226 or a 223 or 556. He's shooting in all likelihood and one version or another of an AR-15. This is a standard assault rifle. He's got 30 rounds in a clip, and he has modified it to be automatic.
Uh-huh.
I said, and I didn't listen to it for 20 seconds. I said, that's what's going on here. And you had all of these professional, in fact, the guy back from New York was head of the police. He says, oh, you know, the reason I said 9 or 10 millimeters, that's what SWAT teams use. No, they don't.
No, they don't.
A SWAT team uses an assault rifle or they use a sniper rifle. What he was shooting had essentially a 22 caliber is basically an assault rifle. It's a really small diameter shell. The thing that is, the bullet is really small diameter. What the military found out is that, yes, when it comes to force, it's the square of the velocity times the mass. Velocity is the square more important than is the mass. So it's not the mass that you're moving, it's the speed to which that mass is accelerated. And so all an assault rifle is a small projectile with a very large cartridge behind it that shoots it very fast.
And to make that in a simpler term, if you shot the bullets into the ground,
yes,
you had a 5.56 or the 223, the 223 would actually go deeper than the 5.56. Because it goes faster,
a little fast. And by the way, the 5.56 and the 223 are very, very similar rounds.
Yeah. Well, yes. You can take
one's
a big,
NATO,
you can take
one's
a bigger
NATO designation, I think, and the other one's the U.S. designation. But if you were to shoot the 9 millimeter or the 10 millimeter or the assault rifle cartridge, which is the smaller bullet size, you're correct. The assault rifle go much deeper into the ground. It will travel much further.
It's made to penetrate.
Yes.
It penetrates and it moves faster.
Yeah. Yes, much faster. Anyway, they couldn't figure out what it was. And you could tell instantly what it was. And then here's the timeline. He shot for 11 minutes. And you can see he would shoot for about 5 seconds. Then it was obvious there was like a second delay, and then it wasn't reloading. It's like he's picking up a second gun and shooting for another 5 seconds. You know, blah, 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 blah. And then there would be about a 10-second to 15-second pause where he's actually slipping another magazine into the gun. You could tell that's exactly what was occurring, and he had the 30-round clips. He shot for 11 minutes.
And he was also switching the windows. He's going back and forth from the window.
Uh-huh, yeah, so he had the two windows side by side, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, he shot for 11 minutes. Do you know what time? how long it took for the SWAT team, the police, to actually enter that room?
No, probably longer than it needed to be. They already told them, didn't they?
An hour.
Was that long?
An hour. You know, the security guard knocked on the door of his room within 12 minutes of the first shot.
Mm-hmm.
He was shot in the process of doing so. The SWAT team and the police did not enter the room for an hour later. And when they entered the room, he had already stopped shooting because he ran out of ammunition an hour previous and had killed himself. No, the only heroism, if you want heroism in that situation, is the hotel security guard.
Absolutely.
And everybody's making a big conniption fit over, boy, the courage of the SWAT team to go in there, breach, 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 you know. But he'd been dead for an hour. Yeah. Good job, guys.
In that situation, I would say that there are some pretty phenomenal stories of people down in the concert.
There were some phenomenal stories, yeah, of people, like particularly one young man, 24 years old, and a mother of four or five was shot through the abdomen, and he carried her out on his back and stayed with her in the hospital. And then when she went into surgery, he went back to the scene to find her purse and bring it back to her at the hospital. That's pretty extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. No. Yep, yep.
And there's some people like there was a couple that was married about a year ago. She's a surgeon. He was her operating room nurse. And the nurse covered the body of his wife, the surgeon, and he was killed and she was spared. So there were some stories of courage, of heroism on the ground. But oh my goodness, so much garbage came out of that. And then everybody trying to figure out ways to make this a gun control issue as opposed to a psychological drug issue.
Well, the terrorist organization, the NRA, right?
Oh, yeah, the terrorist organ. And then you've got the absolute screwballs who are saying, oh, there was a second shooter. Oh, there was. What are all the various things? God, you ought to hear them. You're on Conspiracy News Network. Besides the fact, no, there was not a second shooter.
Second shooter, he was using a belt-fed machine gun.
No, he wasn't. By the way, an entirely different sound. Because those belt-fed machine guns, you ever seen the size of the cartridge? I mean, you know, 50.
Usually they're 50 caliber.
50 caliber is common.
They're mounted on a vehicle usually.
Yeah. You can be a really, really strong dude and put it on a tripod and shoot it. But basically, those things take two people off.
Well, not only that. Well, you need somebody to have somebody that loads, helps,
right,
had the cartridge load in, so that way,
right,
the bullet doesn't jam. Mm-hmm. And then you need to you can't just go full bore it, because the thing wants to, like any gun, it wants to rise. Sure,
yeah,
you could have stabilized.
And that's, by the way, the problem of this guy even shooting the bump stock they want to get rid of. The reason that the military went to the three burst rounds, boom, 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 one trigger pull, three burst rounds, as opposed to fully automatic on their AR-15s.
You can keep it on your target.
You can't keep it on the target. No, the first shot is where you're aiming. The second shot is like 5 degrees to 10 degrees above that. The third shot is 10 degrees above that. By the time you finish the whole, I mean, I've gone off in when I was in Israel, and I shot every version of the fully automatic weapons, and it is amazing how they rise. Even if they tell you it's going to rise and you keep that thing, pointed down.
Take it to the most base form. If you take a handgun,
mm-hmm,
and you want to rip off the entire clip of the handgun, there's a reason why they all don't go in the exact same spot. It's because you can actually pull the trigger faster than you can get it back down to where you're trying to shoot.
Right. And the shorter the barrel, the more it has a tendency to kick up. But assault rifles do not have long barrels.
No. No.
No.
But, yeah.
You know, that's why snipers don't shoot automatic weapons. You know, your second shot is going to be way above your first shot.
Taking a 50-caliber Barrett and making it a fully auto rifle isn't a good idea.
You know, somebody says there's no way that he could have gotten all those guns into his room. You ever heard of a suitcase?
You could fit a lot of them in a suitcase. And the other part is that what gun have you ever had that does not break down?
That's why he had like 15 of them up there.
He brought up like 10 to 15, and he was, you know, he had been there before. He had brought the same amount of suitcases from what it sounds like.
He'd been there for 3 days already. So if he goes up and down three times a day, and I think there was like six suitcases is more than you need to have all those guns. That's it. Why is that such a big deal?
Well,
they're roller suitcases. You roll them right into the elevator and right into your room.
You could even load them up on the baggage cart.
But it's not
like when you put them on the baggage cart that they pick up every bag and they, you know, usually you put your own bag on the baggage cart.
Well, they didn't even have to use a baggage cart. The kind of suitcase that would be ideal for his particular purpose, where you could put in every one of those assault rifles, are the roller bags. Well, they all have wheels on the bottom. They have little handles on them. They're self-dollied. You know, each time you go in, you take one or two, and all you need is five or six of them, and there you go.
Yeah.
They don't even need anybody carrying anything. You put the do not disturb outside of his room. Nobody's going to come in. And this was not hard. But he's been planning it for months, and it was back in June that he was prescribed Valium. And not everybody goes batshit crazy with Valium, but this guy did, and it's one of the known side effects of this anti-anxiety medication. So that was your cause, Valium.
Yeah, I also enjoyed the narrative that they you know, calling the NRA a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
Have you ever looked into the actual numbers of how much the NRA has given since 1998?
No.
$3.5 million.
Oh, it's nothing.
To sitting politicians right now.
Nothing.
They've given $3.5 million.
That's just nothing.
Do you know how much Planned Parenthood has given since 2012?
No.
$38 million. Okay.
And now I want to tell you how many unborn children have been killed by Planned Parenthood.
Tens
of millions?
Tens of millions.
During that period of time? Tens of millions. Well, how many people has the NRA killed?
None.
Zero.
None.
Yeah. So one organization is killing tens of millions of babies, and the other one hasn't killed anyone.
It gets better. It gets better. How much has the government given the NRA?
How much
of taxpayer money has the government given in the NRA?
Nothing.
Zero.
Nothing. Planned Parenthood gets $500 million of subsidies or of taxpayer money a year.
Yeah.
So
great.
So now you tell me, of those two, in the words of Jimmy Kimmel, of those two groups, which one do you really think has the Congress, the old short hairs in a money clip? Because it's not the NRA.
Find the cause, not the tactics. Like we say, was he a terrorist? Terrorism is a tactic. It's not a cause. The gun is a tactic. You know, mass killings are either by knives, bombs, or guns. The weapon is a tactic. You need to find either the motivation, if there was one, or the cause. In this case, the cause is the common denominator of all mass killings. Well, there's two common denominators, Islam and psychiatric drugs.
And to anybody that thinks that your, you know, guns could be so much worse, remember Nice last year, just earlier, Nice, France, when the guy ran through the crowd of people with his car?
Yeah, right.
I believe he killed 86 people, and he ran over, he injured like 500 and some more. So if you don't think that a car can be just as deadly.
How about an airplane? The 9/11 suicide bombers, those Muslims killed 3,000 people. There must have been gun between them. They used box cutters and airplanes.
Yeah, well, if you want to ban things, I'm all for banning, you know, the drugs.
What American institution has killed the most civilians? That would be a terrorist attack, killed the most civilians for a political purpose in the last 25 years. What U.S. organization? Pardon?
U.S. Army.
U.S. Army. Yeah, U.S. Army and Air Force and Navy.
Military.
U.S. military.
Our military. U.S.
Army. Our military. Yeah, our armed forces, our military. Far and away. Tens of thousands for political purposes.
And caused millions more to be killed because of their action.
Yeah, we're in Iraq and Afghanistan, probably a million dead following the U.S. invasions. Citizens never did engage the military of either country. Between the two countries, close to 2 million refugees?
Uh-huh.
Pretty swell. Yeah, great.
What a country.
What a country.
Just think, last week at this time, what was everybody talking about? They were talking about how they're kneeling for the national anthem, and one side was saying they're kneeling, you know, because of being disrespectful to
the military.
To the military, and the other side was telling me that, no, they're kneeling because
Lives Matter.
The inequality and the police brutality. And now this week they're telling me that they want to get rid of our guns.
Right.
So that way only the police and the government have the guns.
The fact of the matter is that the liberals want to get rid of guns because when only the government has the guns, then the government has absolute
has
control.
Power.
absolute power. The reason the U.S. Constitution was written the way it was with the Second Amendment is twofold. One is, if your citizenry is armed with the weapons of war, not with hunting weapons, with the weapons of war, which means fully automatic weapons, and more than that, if your citizenry is armed with the weapons of war, no country can successfully invade you and occupy you. You do not need a standing military. And what Jefferson wanted before he would support the U.S. Constitution is a amendment that said we would not have a standing military. And so the Second Amendment was specifically written so the citizenry would own the kinds of weapons that a military would use, so we could forego having a military, because Jefferson realized that an established military is the second greatest problem you can really perpetrate on a nation.
To your point, was it Madison that actually told a private ship that they were allowed to put cannons on their ship?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they asked they asked him, "Hey, can we put cannons on our ship because we're going on these pirate waters?"
Absolutely.
And he was like, "Of course you can. Why couldn't you?"
Yeah. And who's the primary author of the U.S. Constitution? Madison.
So
he ought to know what he's talking about, right?
Well, yeah, and they also had multi-shot. I forget what it's called, but they had a musket back then that could shoot at a pretty rapid pace, comparably.
Right.
And they were actually going to give them to the American soldiers, but they were too expensive. But if a private citizen wanted to have them, they said, "Sure,
no problem.
Go ahead."
Right.
So
right. There can be no infringement. Every gun law is unconstitutional.
Well,
and the problem, folks, isn't the gun. The problem in this country in terms of mass shootings boils down to one of three things. Now, I said there's two common denominators in mass shootings. Well, in mass shootings, there only are two. Islam, which we tolerate in this country, which is a shame. And number two is psychiatric drugs. And we have a real problem. And liberals change the rules. And there's some benefit here where they change the rules that no person could be institutionalized against their will. And they change the rules on, because of AIDS, of what information can be made public in terms of a person's health. So a psychiatrist or psychologist cannot provide information that a person is a danger to himself and to society, and they can they'll prescribe without notification to anybody mind-altering drugs, and it's those mind-altering drugs that have been the cause of all the non-Islamic mass shootings in this country. Now, there is a third reason for gun violence, and that's, you look at a place like Chicago, and you ought to be able to figure it out, which is that street gangs are making money because the U.S. has made drugs illegal, and so they're an enormous means of wealth and control. And so street gangs shoot one another in turf wars because America has made the drugs illegal.
Yeah.
I think the reason America has made drugs illegal is because it's a significant means to finance the CIA. And then the CIA doesn't want the competition.
Well, that's easy to prove, actually.
Yes.
I had a nephew. He was in, you know, his job in the military was to protect the guard the fields in poppy fields in Iraq. So.
Yeah, in Afghanistan, where they, were virtually destroyed in Afghanistan. We invade, and all of a sudden, Afghanistan returns to a 90% share of the world's heroin market. Mm-hmm. And what happened in America? At that same time, America's addiction on heroin and fentanyl, which is a synthetic form of heroin, becomes epidemic and increases at the rate of 200 to 300% a year.
Mm-hmm.
Leading cause of death in many counties in Ohio, for example. All because we invaded Afghanistan and because the CIA was involved in the invasion and they reestablished the heroin trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny.
I don't mean it funny, but you know what I mean.
So I bet there are, Scott, on the Conspiracy News Network, lots of people that are trying to concoct conspiracies on what was obvious within 5 minutes of the first volley being fired.
Two steps forward, three steps back. I mean, that's how I feel sometimes. It's just, I don't know.
Yep.
It's just weird. And then it shows you how dysfunctional it all is. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason. Like I said, one week they're telling us one thing. This week they're telling us, well, no, that's okay. I don't know. It's all designed, I feel like, to limit my the choices I get to make for myself.
Yeah, I think that that what we've done is we've so dumbed down the country that we get idiots like Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump running against each other for the highest office. We get the leaders that we deserve. And that collectively, the reason that so many people are prone to get their news from social media and are prone to believe absolute moronic stories is that they just are incapable because of the way they were not educated to differentiate between truth and lies. They're irrational, and it's the preponderance of Americans now, and that's a problem that's not solvable. You know, you've got idiots voting for idiots. You can't fix that. All while other idiots march in the streets and say, you know, that the problem is the gun, the problem is the wealthy, the problem is the this, that, and the other thing, and there isn't anybody that's thinking. The problem is hate, and here they are with hateful rhetoric. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. By the way, another little problem we have here in America, the fifth hurricane that's going to hit America in the last month or so?
Several months, yeah.
Yeah, Nate is barreling down now in New Orleans. You know, Maria was actually hit American soil of the islands in the Caribbean as a Cat 5, or maybe it was a 4 when Irma was a 5.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we have as a 4, Harvey?
Yes.
And been a rough year.
Yes, indeed.
You know, what's next? And we obviously don't have the investment necessary in FEMA to fight this many battles simultaneously because, well, we've got to spend all that money on our military.
Well, I'm not sure we'd have enough money for these things most of the time. I mean, if you went to all the insurance companies and then you went to the reinsurers to reinsure them, I don't think they have that many billions of dollars that they can keep up this pace if we have another bad year. I mean, just...
No, my guess is that that what happened in Houston... I mean, Houston was just such a tragedy because of the fact that it's like New Orleans. It's the planning, the lack of planning. You know, 1,300 people died from Katrina for one reason, and that is that that New Orleans is underground and the dike systems were inadequate and they were not properly maintained, and the pumps are old and they were not properly maintained. So the combination of those two is what caused Katrina to destroy most of New Orleans. And then, you know, in Houston, they built homes not only in a floodplain, but they have these retention dams. They didn't dewater them before the hurricane came. And then while the water was already up 6 feet, they decided to dewater them then and took the water up 10 feet.
Well, they're also on it's not limestone, is it? They're built, the water doesn't seep in there like it does in
Yeah, they don't perk, Yeah, and you know, last time I checked, Houston's on a tributary to the Gulf. How hard would it be to build a channel that drains the water out of the place into the Gulf of Mexico? You know, the Gulf of Mexico is really big. You could pour a lot of water into it. It is never going to overflow.
Not raises an inch.
It's just stunning how you know we've chosen to create every manner of entitlement such that we're over $20 trillion in debt, and create every manner of destroying things through our elaborate military, which is larger when you combine it with its spy agencies and the rest of the world combined. And yet, we can't maintain our roads. We can't maintain aqueducts to distribute water. We can't distribute natural gas, which we have plenty of. We can't maintain dikes and runoff channels. What in the heck is wrong with us? And we allow a foreign nation to control our election because we're not smart enough to know fake news from real news.
Yeah. Well, the deceivers win.
The deceivers win. But, you know, I want to turn now to the Chapter 9 of Observation, where we're talking about the history of translations, because this opening paragraph, and we covered it the last time we were in this chapter, and we're going to return to it. Just this paragraph alone, if you are informed and rational, you will cease being a Christian. This is it. It's all over with this one paragraph. It's all over. And this was written by two essential players in the Christian religion, one to another. And it's over if you're rational and informed. You know that this was written. You go verify that what I'm reading to you is what was actually written. And you think it through logically. Christianity has no basis anymore. This is written by This is written by a fellow whose actual name was Eusebius Hieronymus Sophronius. We've shortened his name to Hieronymus. He is known as Jerome. Now, how in the world you get Jerome out of Eusebius Hieronymus Sophronius? I do not know.
Yeah. Everybody likes that J word when they invented it.
I guess so. But he wrote a letter to Pope Damascus. But, you know, if your last name is Damascus and you're claiming to be God's vicar on earth, you've got a real issue because there's only two cities, really actually one city that could rival Damascus in terms of God saying, you know, this is all rotten to the core.
Rome.
He certainly despises Imperial Rome and Roman Catholicism. The city of Rome, he has a lot of negative things to say about the city of Rome. And so, I guess that Rome could play in there, but that would be Babylon.
Oh, yeah, Babylon.
Yeah, Babylon would be So Babylon is probably the worst, Rome second worst, Damascus third worst. And so this Pope's name was Pope Damascus. By the way, what does Pope mean, do you know?
It means Papa.
Yeah, it means Father. Right, Father.
Pope.
Father.
Yeah, the Father.
Yeah, Father. The term was first used by the Caesars in Imperial Rome. When they pretended to be God, they wanted to be God, Father, and you know, it's like Stalin. He presented himself as Father. What did Yosha say about calling oneself Father?
He said, I'm your father.
And yeah. There's only one father, the Father in heaven, and you ought not use the term father.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is Father Damascus. And that was the recipient of the letter. It was written in 405 CE by, we'll just use Jerome. He wrote, if we are to pin our faith to the Latin text, it is for our opponents to tell us which. For there are almost as many forms of text as there are copies. Now, pin your faith is a bad term anyway, just because faith is based on a lack of knowledge. You don't need faith unless you don't know.
It's the unknown.
Right.
Faith is on the unknown.
You can either know or believe. Right. Yes. If you know, you don't need to believe. If you believe, right, it means you do not know. So that's probably not a good term for him to use, but nonetheless, that's the nature. You know, religion and faith have been ubiquitous. Now, when he says Latin text, most people think, oh, well, you know, it's, yeah, the Vulgate. It goes back to the 5th century. Well, he's making it very clear here. There are as many, many Latin texts, and they are all divergent. They're all varied.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the way, in 405, you know, the first Latin text probably didn't even come out until 250 to 300. So they've had a very short period of time to get this corrupt. So he writes, it is for, and by the way, what else is there a little problem of him saying which Latin text?
Yeah, well, you Latin alone.
You've got two problems with Latin.
Never talked in Latin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not only Yosha spoke Hebrew. 100% of Yahweh's revelations are in Hebrew, with exception of little bits of Daniel. And that's in Aramaic, and Aramaic is a sister language of Hebrew. They're extraordinarily similar. If you can read one and speak one, you can read and speak the other. So he spoke Hebrew. Even the one place where it's attributed to him that he said in Aramaic, that's just the stupidity of the Christian New Testament. He was actually citing the opening line of the 22nd Psalm, which is written in and written by Dode, circa 1000 BCE, in Hebrew. So he's reciting a Hebrew statement to a Hebrew audience. He did not speak Aramaic. Now, so you've got people that speak Aramaic. Now, he's only concerned about the Christian New Testament because they don't give to hoots about the what they would call the Old Testament. The oldest copies we have of the Christian New Testament, there's 69 of them that date to between around 200 to 450 CE. So 69 that predate Constantine. So they'd be 200 to 325 CE. 69 of them. What language are all 69 written in?
They're all in Greek.
They're all in Greek. So why are you pinning your faith to a Latin text? He spoke Hebrew. All of the oldest manuscripts are written in Greek, and you're pinning your faith to a Latin text? You're gonna be two translations removed? Hebrew to Greek, Greek to Latin? What is the nation that Yahweh said was the most menacing beast in human history?
Rome.
Yeah, Imperial Rome. And then he said that something will grow out of Imperial Rome. That will morph into a beast that treads upon the entire world. What is the language? Latin is the language of what?
Latin is obviously the Latins, the Romans.
Oh boy! So they're pinning their language to the nation, the empire that Yahweh says the most menacing in human history.
And nailed Yahusha to an upright pole, yes.
Right. So, yeah, they're the ones, by the way, that came up with the idea of a cross. Their crux was, in fact, the last time I checked, they actually invented crucifixion. The Assyrians had a thing where they would tie people to a pole, but crucifixion is, as we know it, that's
a fine art of torture.
Roman, yeah, it's a Roman invention. And by the way, you know, the Roman Catholic Church wants to call Jews the Jesus killers, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Now, all the time. Who killed him?
Well, that's Rome the last time I looked.
Yeah, it was Rome. Rome, Rome, and Rome. Did the Jews even have the authority to put someone to death?
Not unless they wanted to be killed, too.
No, they have no authority to put somebody to death, which means if they had the most heinous criminal and they prosecuted with the most elaborate trial and convicted the most heinous criminal to death, the people doing it would be put to death because the Jews in the province of Yehuda had no authority over capital punishment. Rome governed Yehuda and only Roman law applied.
Mm-hmm.
And so but yet the Roman Catholic Church wants to call Jews the Jesus killers. That's just how perverted the institution is. Okay, so here's the first sentence, and it's, if we are to pin our faith to the Latin text, it is for our opponents to tell us which, because there are almost as many forms of text as there are copies. So that means that the Latin scribes, Roman scribes, cannot be trusted.
No, totally unreliable.
They're wholly and completely unreliable what that means. Now, I figured that out, Kirk, as I was doing my homework on Daniel. I wrote two very long chapters on Daniel, and you'll find them in Volume 7 of Yada Yah. And when I came to the two attacks on the province of Yehuda, 70 CE by the Romans, and then again in 133 CE. And then the period of time thereafter as Imperial Rome morphs into the Roman Catholic Church. I read countless documents written by the Roman historians of the era.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you talk about fake news. You talk about conspiracy theories. These boys didn't get anything right. I mean, typically, you have to get some things right for your story to be credible. I mean, I told you the story about how the most famous of them wrote on the first account of Constantine that he saw that the cross, which was the sign of his God, superimposed on the sun and under this sign conquer, that his first account of Constantine, who was, by the way, a murderous scumbag. It was a fight between two Romans who were trying to pin Roman legions against one another because, you know, they both coveted power. And he was brutal. He cut off the other Roman emperor's head and put it on a stick and carried it through the streets. This is Constantine. So the first accounting of Constantine by the historian, there's no mention of that whole encounter. It's the third iteration of it, like 15 years later, that he decides, you know, this would make a really good story because we have migrated towards accepting Christianity now in the Roman Empire. So I'll put that in, and Constantine can be the founder.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the fact that, of course, the sun is the guise of Satan. The cross is a pagan symbol. God is opposed to nations and armies, and therefore conquering. And the Cairo that he put on his shields is Chrysos, which means to be drugged in Greek. And there isn't a single artifact, not one, that shows that it actually occurred. And when Cassiodio wrote his third variation of it, he had it occurred in a place that Constantine was not at.
There is no conquering in this for us.
No.
I mean, so we didn't everything, say they don't conquer
so,
these people.
Right. So everything that the Romans were very much like the Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
There were no historians. They were storytellers. And they wanted to mix their religion into the stories. It's like Homer's Odyssey.
Iliad and the Odyssey.
Yeah, particularly the Odyssey. It's a religious text that mixes in some places that places that actually exist, but with this whole fanciful religious context. That's what they did. That's why the Latin Roman scribes could not be trusted. And it's those same Latin scribes that we're therefore responsible for the text right now that you would call your Christian New Testament.
Yeah, this is a dogma to run the new empire on.
You betcha. That is all they wanted to do. If, on the other hand, so what he's looking for, he wants a singular text that he can say is, you know, this is perfect. This is the Word of God, the inerrant Word of God that they can
do,
right. The authorized version, like the King James, the authorized version, so that no one can argue against them. And if anybody argues against them, they say, it's our text.
Right at the stake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right at the stake.
Right. That's what they did with the Quran, by the way. They burned all the other copies. If, on the other hand, and that's why we don't have copies of Matanyah, which was really written in Hebrew, we don't have any Hebrew copies, is because anything that was written in Hebrew, Imperial Rome...
With you. You destroyed it.
Yeah, not just burned it, but burned you in it. If you owned a Hebrew copy, that was a disincentive. If, on the other hand, we are to glean the truth... Glean the truth. Glean is a term that means to take a very small harvest as a gleaning. That means that it's a secondary harvest where just extraordinarily small amount is harvested. So to use glean means we don't want to know a lot.
Yeah, we just want to take what we need.
If we can get a couple of nuggets here and there, that'll work for it. If we are to glean the truth from a comparison of many, why not go back to the original Greek? And correct the mistakes, and I'll read the rest of it later. The original Greek. Was the Greek the original?
No, sir.
There's only one group of part of the Christian New Testament that was originally written in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Paul's letters.
Well, that's all Paul's. Yeah.
Paul, yeah, but I Paul say. But the only time that Paul ever quoted God, he never quoted Yahusha accurately once. He actually never quoted Yahweh accurately either. But he did make a habit of creating these little truncated, out of context, and errantly rendered statements from Yahweh, and then twisting them to create the opposite impression of what they actually said when rendered completely and in context. Paul, who Yahweh calls the plague of death, is the only one that wrote originally Greek. Now, it's a possibility, then probably a likelihood, that Luke, who was not an eyewitness, who has nothing but hearsay information, and was wrong a great deal, would have written in Greek too. But the only eyewitness that actually wrote a biography of Yahusha is Matanyah. And it was written in Hebrew. So Greek was not the original language, and Yahusha never spoke Greek. So Greek could never be the original language. And correct the mistakes introduced by inaccurate translators and blundering alterations of confident but ignorant critics. And further, all that has been inserted or changed by copyists more asleep than awake. What do you think the likelihood was that the Latin copyists and translators were any better than the Greek?
None. They're
none.
Terrible.
No. As a matter of fact,
you move to a separate language, you also get more.
As much as Romans hated Jews, the province of Yehuda and Yehudim, they hated them, they despised them. There was one group of people that hated them far more than the Romans did. The Greeks. The Greeks.
The Greeks.
The Greeks thought they were vastly superior in intellect.
They were the intellectual.
Right, and they thought they were vastly superior in terms of physical beauty. They thought they were vastly superior in their liberated sexuality, their perverted sexuality. They thought they were far better in terms of their art. They thought, the Greeks thought that their culture was vastly superior. By the way, can you tell me in the last 2,000 years, what has been invented that is pushed the envelope on the sciences or the arts a meaningful degree by a Greek versus a Jew?
None.
No. The fact is the Jews were brighter, and the Greeks hated them for it.
Yeah.
Just despised them for it.
Well, you know the story of the old Greeks who, when the Zoroites came out of Egypt and they founded Troy and all, and that started to influence them. That's the same time that their historians claim that their their culture became elevated.
Yes.
Who was doing the elevation? Well, the guys from Egypt, they said. Well, right. Who were the guys from Egypt? Jews.
Jews. Correct.
So, yeah. Give me a break.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, the great philosophers of Greece were Sophists, and they were Gnostics. And Gnosticism and Sophism are completely erroneous. Mm-hmm. You know, Plato, Aristotle, their religious beliefs and their philosophical beliefs and their scientific beliefs, they were completely wrong.
Right.
And wasn't that just a little bit wrong? They were completely wrong.
So,
I mean, it's
well, I'm a philosopher is what I would
say. Yeah, but so the bottom line here is he's saying that the Latin texts were inaccurately translated. They were changed by critics. That the ones that the copyists who wrote them were more asleep than awake. Well, we find exactly the same thing in the Greek texts. By the time we have the first copy, which is the first copies are second century, most late second century, about 100 years from the time that the original autograph would have been written, and they're already translated out of Hebrew into Greek. And the difference between those oldest 69 manuscripts and the Textus Receptus, on about an average of about 182,000 words, there's 300,000 known discrepancies.
Yes.
Now, when you have that many discrepancies, you run into exactly what he said here. You cannot hope to create a correct version based upon whether you have 1,000 lies or 100 lies. You don't find one truth from a pile of lies. You know, like the old adage, two wrongs don't make a right. Well, I'm going to tell you, 100 wrongs don't make a right.
No, you can't.
And that is the basis of the Christian New Testament. It is wholly and completely unreliable and can't be salvaged. To call it the inerrant word of God is just flat out stupid. You know, first of all, God didn't speak English. He didn't speak Latin. He didn't speak Greek. He only spoke Hebrew. And his testimony is recorded in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, full stop.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have anything to do with the Christian New Testament. Now, there's a possibility that he dictated the revelation through a malach to Yahuchanan.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have very many old copies of it. We only have it in Greek. We don't have it in Hebrew. And there are aspects of Montaigne which are probably accurate. But, you know, like in Matanya, he begins by saying that as a fulfillment of the virgin birth pronouncement through the prophet Isaiah,
Yeshua,
you know, he was born of a virgin. Well, Yeshua doesn't say, Isaiah doesn't say he'd be born of a virgin, just says he'd be born of a young woman.
Mm-hmm.
It does not use the word, Hebrew has a word for virgin, didn't use it.
Yeah.
And we have the Dead Sea Scrolls that prove, going back, you know, 300 years before Matanyahu set pen to parchment, to prove that it was not virgin.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's problems in Matanyahu. Now, is there the likelihood that some careless scribe or some critic who wanted to change the text to their liking changed it? Yeah, probably. And I'm not going to say that it was Matanyahu's fault, but there is no proof whatsoever that God inspired anything other than the possibility of the book of Revelation. And if you want to understand Revelation, you really have to understand Daniel. Most of it is based on Daniel.
Let me ask you a quick question.
Uh-huh.
I was studying a lexicon, and it's Jensenius, you know, the German theologians. I call it the German theologian lexicon.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Yahweh's name, and mm-hmm. he describes it. His name is eternal, never changing, mm-hmm. reliable, and trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's so, and he acknowledges that is, how can you possibly have a second testimony?
Right.
A New Testament. You cannot.
Right. Yeah, he says forever that his testimony, his word, endures forever.
Mm-hmm.
So how in the world can you have a New Testament with a new and different plan?
So it's irrelevant what's written in the Greek. It's already in his
right.
That his Torah is perfect and is complete. And
correct.
Got 40 prophets in it. He tells you everything. Yosha doesn't do it. Yosha served the purpose, obviously, Pesach Lamb, but he's also what he
That's
quotes
it.
Is the Torah over and over and over again. So
correct.
So it's a